This is your home for Progressive Talk. AirAmericaRadio.com.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty! We are free at last!
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Generating, enhancing, and exercising influence for the Air America community and making a difference in our country and our world. Welcome to Clout with Richard Green on Air America Radio.
And here it is, the second week of the Month of Truth, our Thursday night Clout debate series. Last week we had Webster Tarpley and a professor talking about conspiracy theories and false flag operations, and hopefully we're going to get a little more heated this week. We are talking about the destruction of, was it demolished? Did it come down because of airplanes? Of World Trade Center Tower number 1, number 2, and of course, number 7. I want all of you who are 9/11 Truth members, who are listening on airamerica.com or in your local affiliates, to put out the word to anyone and everyone who you know who is at all interested in this issue. And I'm talking about people who say, even good Democrats, good progressives who go, nah, it's this is BS, this is tinfoil hat stuff, this is conspiracy theory stuff, stop talking to me about this. I want you to email them right now, and wherever they live in the world, have them go to www.airamerica.com. That's what's so great about having that, because you don't need a radio station. There are 300 million radio stations, approximately, in the United States. It's called your computer. And if you have people who just want to feel good about the fact that we are covering, tackling an issue that the mainstream corporate media will not tackle, have them log on as well. We're going to be looking at the numbers, and I'm serious about this. I am only willing to stick my neck out the way that I am doing and battle to put this kind of programming on the air if, in fact, people appreciate it and they show up. So we have a device that measures every single person who logs on, and I want to see a doubling or a tripling of our normal numbers. Otherwise, I'm just not going to be motivated to keep doing this because it's not easy. It is not a widely accepted thing. There are a lot of people, even today, who think that people who even want to continue to talk about this subject are crazy people. And I'm not crazy, and I don't like to have to fight that unless there's some upside here. So let's get people who don't believe that there was an inside job of any kind, or let's get people who do believe, who just want to hear an intelligent, hopefully journalistic debate. So who are we going to have tonight? We are going to be having three people who have quite a bit of information from a technical engineering scientific standpoint about why and how these buildings came down and what that means in terms of whether the official 9/11 story is in fact true. Okay, and you know the official story, and that is that the two planes hit the two twin towers, and because of the jet fuel and the heat, that the metal was compromised and it buckled, and because of that, it precipitated this pancake effect and it came down even at the speed of gravity. Interesting. Is it true? Is it not true? Then building number 7 is kind of an interesting thing, isn't it? Because no airplane hit it, and there was relatively small fires, and there are theories about that, that the shock to the foundation when the two big buildings came down was so much. But then the question is, well, why didn't every other building around there come down? So we have a person who's going to defend the official story, and his name is John Brown, and the people who are going to rebut the official story, Dr. Stephen Jones, Mr. Gage, and Tony Zamboni. But first we go to my co-producer for today's Month of Truth topic, and he's a fascinating guy in his own right. His name is Kevin Barnett. He has 4 advanced degrees, a PhD from the University of Wisconsin. He has been very involved in the 9/11 Truth movement since early 2004. He hosts a number of radio shows, one that he's most proud of, NoLiesRadio.org. 5-minute headlines obviously that you don't get with the corporate media. Kevin, And more importantly, he's running for Congress in the 3rd District of Wisconsin against a Democrat who is a pro-war, in Kevin's words, a pro-war Democrat, Ron Kind. Kevin Barnett, thanks so much for helping me on this show. Welcome to Clout on Air America.
Well, thanks, Richard. It's actually Barrett.
Barrett, I'm sorry.
No problem.
So, yeah, we want to get that right when people go into the voting booth and vote for you coming up soon. So
that'd be really sad if they elected a guy named Barnett instead of me.
Well, as long as that person was an anti-war person, we'd be okay, right?
Yeah, okay. I'll vote for him then.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the guests that you've helped us line up today.
Well, I think we've got three of the very best and most qualified people to talk about what happened at the World Trade Center. We've got an engineer, Tony Zambodi. We've got a physicist, Stephen Jones, and we've got the head of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, Richard Gage. These are three of the top experts in the field.
Okay, but way more important than that, because it's easy, not that they're not important, but it's easy to find people who challenge the official story, especially on the demolition or the destruction of these three buildings. What were you able to find, and how hard was it to find someone who was willing, with some background, willing to defend the official story?
Well, you know, Richard, I've been trying to find such a person for 4 years now, and I feel like Diogenes with his lamp, searching everywhere for an honest man. There doesn't seem to be anybody out there with the qualifications who actually sits down and looks at this evidence who's willing to debate it. At the University of Wisconsin, the History Club canvassed half the university looking for somebody to debate in favor of the official story. They couldn't find anybody, and so I took part in the presentation in which there was no other side. Same thing in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The University of Michigan was canvassed. More than 1,000 DVDs and invitations were given to professors. Not one was willing to defend the official story. A couple did respond that they knew that it was a controlled demolition. In fact, it was obvious, but they couldn't say so, or they would lose their jobs and their funding.
Right. And I put out, you know, a media request to Popular Mechanics, who very notably came out with this very thorough, supposedly, refutation of so much of, you know, what many people believe happened on 9/11, and I have yet to hear back from them. But you did find somebody who we are happy to have on and is a courageous soul. Tell us about him.
Well, you know, in those 4 years, the person who has been able to best try to defend the official story, rather unsuccessfully, I'm afraid, but at least he's trying, is John Brown. He's an ex-Special Forces guy. I think he's a good patriotic American. I think he's really got it wrong, and he doesn't seem to really listen to what I have to say and think critically about it, but he's at least willing to publicly defend the official version, and so I salute him for that.
Okay. Julian, do we have Ron on? John, do we have John? Okay, we're going to be getting him on. Yes, John Brown, I'm sorry. Do we have him on? Okay, perfect. Mr. Brown, welcome to Clout.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Good, good. Well, you're a brave soul, as you heard Kevin talking about. You know, it's been very hard for us to find somebody to defend the official story. And, by the way, thank you for your service to our nation. When were you in the Navy?
I was actually in the Marine Corps, and I was in from 97 to 2001 active duty, and then from there to 2004 reserve. I'd like to clear something up, though. I don't support the official story. Totally. I know that there's lies and deception in there. I just don't think that a group of secret people snuck into the towers undetected, slipped explosives in there. They were capable of withstanding the impact of airplanes, later brought down the towers. Not one piece of physical evidence was found in the rubble. Nobody from any foreign country like Russia or China or France or any of the other countries would love to bring us to our knees economically or militarily have come out and made a big deal out of it. But
okay,
I do acknowledge there's lots of lies in the report.
Okay. How do you believe that World Trade Center number 1 and number 2 and number 7 came down?
I think the first two towers, basically you had airplanes flying at roughly 500 miles an hour. They hit the buildings an amount of structural damage that nobody knows for sure how much was done. So you had the equivalent of a 30 or 40 story building standing on top of a structurally unsound steel columns and fire.
Structurally unsound because.
Because they
those
were hit
stories,
with an airplane.
Those stories were above the airplane impact. Okay,
correct.
Go ahead.
So I'm saying that from where the airplanes impacted to the top of the building, that's basically the equivalent of a 30 or 40 story building standing on top of a structurally unsound column. And without knowing exactly how much damage was done to those columns, the inner core columns or the inner 47 columns, you can't say that there wasn't enough damage or there was enough damage to cause it to collapse. I don't think there's any evidence that there was a controlled demolition in those buildings. And as far as World Trade Center 7, again, there was an unknown amount of structural damage done to the building when the other tower collapsed into it. And you can see videos okay. of debris hitting the towers. There's firemen who are on the scene who... are saying that it's going to come down because nobody can go up there and put the fires out. The building is leaning, it's creaking, it's making noises. People on the ground seem to know it was going to come down, so I don't think it was... There's no evidence that it was a controlled demolition.
Okay, well, that is a very provocative statement, sir, and I appreciate you playing
into... You have some physical evidence that there was?
Oh, well, guess what? You're going to be with us for the whole show, right?
I can be.
Good. Good. You are invited, and we greatly appreciate it. I am not a physicist, nor an engineer, nor an architect, but we have three people who are, and I would love for you to honestly listen to what they have to say and then respond, and hopefully everybody will be more educated through the process. That's the purpose of our Thursday night Clout Debate Series. This month, May, is the month of truth. Tonight, the topic, what brought down World Trade Center number 1, number 2, and number 7. We have five people who are going to engage in that debate, and we will open it up to your calls on 866-303-2270 in a little bit. This is Richard Green. This is Clout. This is Air America, where we talk about stuff that you just don't hear anyplace else. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And we are back with a whole bunch of people talking about 9/11. What brought the buildings down? This is our Thursday night Clout Debate Series and the Month of Truth. And I want you to contact people who are not convinced one way or another and see if by them tuning in they can get some clarity one way or another. Let's go first to an engineer, a mechanical design engineer, Tony Zambotti. Tony, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, nice to be here, Richard.
So you may have heard John Brown say that there is no evidence to his knowledge that indicates that this was a controlled demolition. What's your view on that?
Right. Well, you have to look at the mechanics of the whole thing. The aircraft entered the buildings, the towers, at 30 and 38 degree angles, and the floors were there was like 12 feet between floors. So those wings came in contact with at least four floors, edge on. If you know what I mean by that, I mean you're going across the stiffness of the floor or the beam. In the case of the North Tower, and I want to just correct, I just want to add that it was 12 floors above the collapse initiation site. It happened on the 98th floor. So if you look at the entrance of the aircraft, there's literally no chance that those wings made it across 60 feet of reinforced concrete, 4.5 inches thick, with they had two layers of quarter-inch rebar in them, 70 to 90,000 PSI rebar, which would have kept them from literally busting apart, and would have ripped those wings to shreds before they ever got near the core. So what you have left is a 16.5 diameter fuselage. Coming into contact that could possibly penetrate into the core. The core was 137 feet across in the direction that the aircraft entered the North Tower. Speaking predominantly of the North Tower here. The columns were 11 to 21 feet apart approximately. So even if every column it contacted, it knocked out. Volumetrically alone, it could only get a limited number. and I would say far fewer than 10. So right there, you have to look at what the aircraft damage did, and that was possibly 20% of the core columns maximum. And we know only 20% of the, or less, a little less than 20% of the exterior columns were gone. We can see that. And this did studies on this. They did three cases. They did a less severe, a nominal case, and a more severe case, and they determined how many columns would be severed or heavily damaged. And their nominal
case. Tony, I'm allowing you to go on, even though it's pretty detailed.
All right, well, I'll try to make it.
No, I don't mind the detail, but
right.
give us a summary. Translate that into
right, the summary basically is there's not enough evidence of damage from aircraft impact or fire to bring those buildings down. This only got 1% of the steel from those fire-affected areas of those towers. And in that evidence, there's no evidence of that steel experiencing high temperatures. In fact, 97% only experienced 250 degrees centigrade, where steel doesn't lose any strength. Only a couple percent experienced 600 degrees centigrade strength.
John, we've just got a minute. A quick kind of summary answer to what you've heard from Tony thus far.
I think there's a lot of assumptions. First of all, it's nice to meet you. I'm not going to pretend like I know more than a structural engineer, but I hear a lot of assumptions. Nobody knows, not me or you, know exactly how much damage was done to those buildings. And you can't take, because the people who built the building said, oh, it could withstand this, that their word is more important than any other structural engineer who said, I'm surprised the building stood up as long as it did. So to assume
we have a hard break here. I will have you back on, and you're going to be on for a lot. Let's find those structural engineers, and let's get them on this show. This is Richard Green. This is Clout. This is Air America. Stay with us. We got 2 hours of this.
You're listening to Clout with Richard Green.
And we have all sorts of people here talking about our debate topic, and that is what happened on 9/11, what brought the buildings down. You guys want this programming? We are giving it to you. And I am encouraging you to send out emails and have people tune in. I mean, it's like, we want more 9/11 programming. We love when you do it. And I have to tell you, the numbers are normal. So, you know, based upon our stats, this is not a subject that inspires people. And if you are part of a 9/11 truth group, I want you to get people to listen. I want to be able, as I said last week, I want to be able to walk in to the suits at Air America and say, look, we doubled or tripled our evening ratings because we dealt with this topic. We need to do more of that. Okay, so we are talking about what brought these buildings down. We have a gentleman named John Brown, who is a former special forces person from the Marines. He has studied 9/11 quite a bit. He is not an engineer, but he has some very strong opinions about it, and we're really glad to have him on. We have a mechanical design engineer, Tony Zambotti, who is on, and we are just now being joined by Professor Stephen Jones, who is best known for his work on the demolition, the controlled demolition, in his opinion, of the towers on 9/11. Professor Jones, welcome to Clout on Air America.
Hello, I'm glad to join you. I'm a little concerned about my... I'm going to try to get to where I have a better phone connection.
Are you on a cell phone?
I'm on a cell phone. That's all I have this evening.
Okay. Well, you should tune into our shows that we have about the dangers of using cell phones. So other subject. Anyway, we can hear you fine. Before you go and try to find another connection, can you give us a summary of your argument?
Sure. I would first of all to a paper that we just published in a civil engineering journal in April, and this journal lists 14 points of we put it as points where we agree with the official government report, from the National Institute of Standards and Technology and FEMA. And yet, in those four things, as you read up, you'll see that we lay out a case that is contrary to the official story. For example, FEMA, the collapse of Building 7, World Trade Center 7, they say that their best hypothesis, which is a fire-based hypothesis, low probability of occurrence. We certainly agree with that. Then NIST, in their reports, we've of course written to them, and then they respond.
Okay, now what is NIST?
NIST again is the National Institute of Standards and Technology. This is the national laboratory that was a federally funded laboratory that was charged to explain the collapse of the towers and World Trade Center 7. They do have about a 10,000-page report on the towers collapse. Their final report on Building 7 has yet to appear. But with regard to the towers, we challenged their report, and they wrote back to us, and they said that I think I can quote it, we are unable to provide a full explanation for the total collapse. In other words, they are not able to.
Now, this is the total collapse of 1 and 2 or 7? Stephen? Okay. It looks like the cell connection got really bad to the point where we lost his connection. Tony, what do you think about what Professor Jones just said?
There was some interference. What do I think about what Dr. Jones just said?
Yes.
I think he's right. I was a co-author on that paper with him. The 14 points of agreement with official government reports. There are a number of contradictions in what is put out. They're not. It doesn't support much of what is stated in the reports. Doesn't support the conclusions of the reports. And that's some of what.
So their conclusion. Let's go back. So their conclusion is what? How did these buildings come down?
Well, NIST concludes that they only go so far as the initiation of collapse, and they claim that the floors sagged, pulled in the perimeter columns, causing them to buckle, and then that immediately transpired over the entire exterior of the building, and that's all they say. That's as far as they go. And they claim that the floor trusses sagged due to fire and pulled those columns in. And there's problems with that because they did testing at Underwriters Laboratories on floor truss assemblies, and they only got 3 inches of sag. Bear in mind that was on 35-foot assemblies. The tower assemblies, the floor truss assemblies were 35-foot on one side and 60-foot on the other side because the core was rectangular. And these floor trusses... connected the perimeter columns to the cores, and that's what the floors sat on. They got 3 inches of sag on a 35-footer, and you could extrapolate that to a 60-footer, and it would give you 20-some inches. But in order to get them to collapse in their computer model, they went to like 42 inches, which was not observed in test. They have no basis or backing for that, and that has gotten into the 14 points paper.
Okay, so Tony, again, if you can translate that into a layperson's conclusion, what's going on there?
Well, there's not a good basis. Talk about assumptions. That's an extreme assumption that those trusses pulled in those columns, and the claim is that the columns were seen buckling minutes before, but they only have photos of that. There's no video of that, so we have no video evidence of those columns being buckled minutes before the actual collapse. Of course, when the buildings did collapse, the exterior columns did buckle. But that could have been caused by other things, by the core collapsing. And what caused the core to collapse?
So it's a little bit of a chicken and the egg kind of situation. John Brown, what's your response to what you've just been listening to? John, are you on with us still? John?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, John, go ahead.
Okay, I would agree with the Brigham Young University Physics Department that, you know, they say Professor Jones' department and college administrators are not convinced that his analysis and hypothesis have been submitted to a relevant scientific venues that would ensure rigorous technical peer review. I also agree with the College of Engineering and Technology Department that structural engineering faculty of the Fulton College of Engineering and Technology do not support the hypothesis of Professor Jones. And another thing is, if people in his line of profession, which before he was doing this had nothing to do with the forensic identification of a collapse of a building, so it is relevant what he did in his work, but it's a little misleading because he didn't have anything to do with buildings collapsing or how buildings were designed or anything like that. But normally what people do in these fields is when they have a hypothesis, they submit it to be reviewed by their peers, not people within the 9/11 truth community, but people within the physics community, people within the structural engineer communities, people who are civil engineers. So they have their papers out there, they get them, they submit them, and they have them reviewed. They won't do that. Instead, they change it to, oh, here are the 14 points where we agree with the 9/11 report. If they so truly believe that what they're saying is true, then why are they afraid to have it submitted for a peer review? I mean, they just toss these papers around within their own 9/11 truth communities, and everybody says, yeah, you're right, but they won't go through any true scrutiny. And I think that says something about, you know, their true beliefs of what they're saying.
Okay, and that was John Brown, who was taking the con position, that is, that the 9/11 truth movement's assertions that these buildings were blown up, that it was a controlled demolition, are untrue. Professor Jones, are you back on with us? Okay. Tony, you have been working with Professor Jones. You just heard John Brown say that Professor Jones' own university department thinks that his conclusions are unjustified. How do you respond to that?
Well, they gave no details of why they didn't agree with him. And the one professor at Brigham Young, I think, that did give details was erroneously assumed that the towers were a tubular structure with exterior columns only. So, and that's covered in the paper. That's the kind of thing we're trying to dispel. Those columns were not, anybody that studied it knows this, they were not only exterior columns only, they had a massive core. And the...
John, that seems to be a very big deal, and Professor David Ray Griffin, who I'm sure you're familiar with, who was not able to be with us tonight, he just goes nuts in talking about how the 9/11 Commission also seemed to ignore these 47, you know, steel cores, columns that are in the core of the building that were not affected by the airplanes.
Okay, well, one, again, nobody knows how much damage was done to those 47 core columns. The type of building is a tube-in-tube design. So those 47 columns, in the in-between, though, or inside them, is hollow. So you have the exterior columns, and then you have the tube inside of the outer tube. So it is accurate in saying that there is a tube inside there. How much space is in between those 47 columns is not as much as in between the outside of those columns and the perimeter of the building. So it's not two equal tubes. But again, you have to know how much damage was done to those core columns to know if it could have collapsed the way it did or not. But the way
will we ever know?
To be honest with you, I don't think so. And I think it was very honest of the NIST and the FEMA reports when they come out and say, we don't know, or to our best guess, this is what happened, because you have many of the community's best people doing this work, and it's not a group of neocon engineers who want to support Dick Cheney and George Bush and don't want to put anything out there that, you know, is going to make them look bad. That's not realistic in the type of people you're talking about. I mean, these people have been honest when they said initially that they don't know how World Trade Center 7 fell. They didn't have all the video and photographic evidence that they do now. They still don't have everything, and they've been honest in saying that, and that's come under a lot of scrutiny. So you kind of have to, what do you want? Do you want them to be honest and say we don't know, or do you want them to lie? I mean, it's, I don't know.
Let's ask, Let's ask Kevin Barrett. Kevin, what do you want? You've been very involved in the 9/11 truth movement. What do you think's going on when they come to that conclusion, saying, "Hey, we don't have enough information, and therefore we can't determine this decisively"?
Well, what they can't explain is the collapse itself. NIST has given us the third official version of what happened to the Twin Towers, and nobody's given us a version of what happened to Building 7 yet. And this totally different new version that they've given us doesn't even pretend to explain why the building came down. All it does is explain the loss of vertical support on a couple of floors. That has nothing to do with why the building disappeared, much less disappeared straight down at free fall speed, with all hundreds of witnesses reporting massive explosions, including explosions that happened before the plane hit. So,
right.
In fact, this is not a complicated engineering problem here. Anybody with eyes who's willing to spend some time looking at the videos can figure out that this is a demolition in an hour or two of their time. And the NIST, by not admitting or by saying that it doesn't know what happened, is really ultimately confessing to controlled demolition.
Well, that's an interesting point. We're going to come back and hear what John Brown, the representative of the vast other side that won't show up on a radio show, has to say, and want to talk to John about Building 7, because what you can say about Building 1 and 2, you certainly can't about 7, because there was no major aircraft that crashed into it. So it's a whole different engineering situation. We're going to be back. Professor Stephen Jones, Tony Zambotti, Kevin Barrett, and John Brown. This is Richard Green. This is Cloud, our month of truth, our Thursday night debate series tonight. What brought those three buildings down? Stay with us, and we will get to your calls as well. We'll be right back. And we are back having an interesting debate on 9/11. It is our Thursday night debate series, our month of truth dealing with 9/11 related issues. And I do want to thank you and congratulate you. We are seeing some patterns in our stream listenership that we have never seen before. So please continue to do that. Keep emailing people and saying, hey, you know, Richard Green, Clout, Air America, they are, in fact, seriously dealing with topics that the mainstream corporate media are not dealing with. Give it a listen. We've got Professor Stephen Jones. We have who will be rejoining us. We have Tony Zambotti, who is a mechanical design engineer. We have Kevin Barrett, who has a radio show in Wisconsin, is also running for Congress there and has been very involved in the 9/11 truth movement. And we have John Brown, who is a brave soul, who believes that the buildings came down more or less the way the official story said, and that they were not the result of a controlled demolition. Let's go to a caller, though. Unfortunately, a caller who has a little more skin in the game than anybody else on this call, someone who has suffered the human part of this tragedy. It's not just about conspiracies. It's about 3,000 people and their families. Joseph in Anchorage, Alaska, welcome to Clout.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. And before we go any further, I'm very much a supporter of Richard Gage and the concept that a lot of them put forth. So I am biased, but Mr. Brown, I'm very much in agreement with you. A scientific peer review is needed. And as far as my skin in the game, just to clarify, Prince Ciotta is my last name. Vincent Prince Ciotta was in the South Tower. He's a firefighter and lost his life. But up on the 78th floor was Oreo Joseph Palmer, the Battalion 7 chief and his assistant, whose transcripts got out to us just late year before last, in 06. We finally found out they were on 78, Mr. Brown, in the South Tower. And their report was two small fires in the floors directly in front of them and above them, which is where the plane went in at 80-81, floors 80 and 81. They were on 78. Did you know that, Mr. Brown? I'm sorry. Hello?
John Brown, are you still with us?
I didn't. Maybe he didn't understand that I might be asking a question. May I do that?
No. I did hear everything you said. First of all, I'm extremely sorry to hear about your loss. And
understand, they're in New York. We moved when I was a young man. And while I did meet Vincent, I think once at a dinner, he was so young that it was a shock to me to find out that he had grown up, become a fireman, and lost his life. So while I am connected, I don't mean to artificially pry open any doors with that, and I appreciate your concern. 342 other firefighters and thousands of people.
Well, I
blown into pieces, by the way, sir, quarter of an inch.
I pray that hopefully what we're doing here will help us all find out more of the truth of exactly what happened that day and what we can do to prevent it from happening again.
Well, in a peer review effort, I have stripped away all conspiracy theory, for I support none. I'm 68 years old. I've had nearly 40 years in the courtroom assisting attorneys in presenting evidence. So I have a website that's csi911.info.
Okay.
And at that page, I ask only one question. I point out some very evident, undeniable physical facts about the destruction of the North Tower, for example, and how a tremendous amount of...
Joseph, listen, we really appreciate you being able
to
anchor it. No, don't leave.
Approach,
Joseph.
Yes.
Joseph, don't leave. We're going to come back with you. AirAmerica.com/clout. We're going to put up all these links. This is Richard Green, 9/11 Truth, the Week of Truth. Hey, we're doing the kind of radio that you guys all say that you want. Let's talk about 9/11. Let's have a real journalistic discussion, debate about 9/11. Let's not have all of this stuff whitewashed and have people say what Antonin Scalia said about the 2000 election being stolen. Hey, get over it. You know, get over it. Let's move on. Get over it. We're not getting over it because why? Because there are many people who believe that the modus operandi that created or allowed 9/11 to happen the way it did is potentially something that might happen again. And the people who did that, whether it was perhaps the 19 hijackers or people within our own government, special operations or whatever, that they... if the light of truth is not shined on what truly happened, that they, in fact, may do it again. And we know, and I know for absolute certain, which is why one of the reasons I'm devoting 5 full weeks to this here on Clout, that the 9/11 Commission did not do a complete investigation. Now, how do I know that? You know, I'm not a scientist. I didn't go through all of the papers. I didn't do all of that. But I spoke to 4 different 9/11 commissioners, and they each told me in almost identical words, including the chairman, Thomas Keene, and Tim Romer, and Bob Carey, and Max Cleland. They all told me, well, Max Cleland said the 9/11 commission was a joke, and he quit it. But the other 3 told me that there wasn't enough time and there wasn't enough money to conduct a complete investigation. It took over a year, well over a year, to even start that investigation, which is in and of itself pretty curious and bizarre. And they only spent $15 million. They originally allocated $3 million. And there was something like $64 million allocated for Ken Starr to investigate the blue dress and Bill Clinton's sexual activities in the White House and Whitewater. Which do you think is more important to the future of our country? So we here on Little Air America, we're doing our best to fill that gap, to provide some degree of journalistic integrity to this process. So we searched high and low for some people who could defend the official story. We have a wonderful spokesperson who named John Brown, who is a former Special Forces member of the Marines and has served his country well and has studied this issue in great detail. He does not believe that there were controlled demolitions of the buildings. We have Tony Zambotti, who is a mechanical design engineer. We have Professor Stephen Jones, who is quite famous for his conclusions that the buildings, in fact, were brought down by controlled demolition. And we now have with us Richard Gage with AE911Truth.org. He is an architect. Mr. Gage, welcome to Air America.
Thank you very much, Richard. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Right. Now, you are an architect and a member of the AIA. Tell us your take on the demolition or the destruction of these 3 buildings.
Well, It appears to be anything other than a gravitational collapse, which is what the official story tells us. What we
now,
have.
Why do you say that? Because that is a bold statement. You are calling the 9/11 Commission and a whole bunch of people essentially liars.
We have a sudden onset of destruction with sounds of explosions and flashes of light heard by 118 firefighters and other first responders. These are recorded on by the city fire commissioner Thomas von Essen to preserve the record. We did not know about these 118 witnesses until August of 2005, when finally the New York Times won a lawsuit against the city who was trying to withhold this information from the American public. Why? Because they talk about all of these explosions going around the building, boom, 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 like a belt, all these explosions, debris flying out, and then the building coming down. Flashes of light, orange and red flashes on various floors at various different times. Very, very important evidence. We then have what amounts to is a free fall pace of destruction. What we're told by the official story is that the defenders of the official story, we have a 15-story building that's driving, in the case of the North Tower, driving this, the rest of this building down at free fall speed, virtually, against 80,000 tons of structural steel, which gave absolutely or virtually no resistance to that weight above it. And in fact, NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, didn't even try to calculate the resistance of that building to that weight, because they know that it's a ridiculous calculation. The building would have resisted that fall and arrested that collapse right away. Well, it also turns out that we have beams, 4 and 20-ton beams ejected laterally out of this building at 70 miles an hour, many of them, almost instant acceleration. This is on the video. This is not a matter of debate. It's physics. And they land 500 feet and 600 feet laterally, impaling themselves on surrounding buildings. In addition, we have 110 floors in each of these towers. These are metal decking with lightweight and heavyweight concrete in the case of the core. They're an acre in size, each of these floors. We would expect to see 100, maybe 50 floors at the bottom of each in a gravitational collapse. Guess how many we see? Not one. There's not one floor at the bottom of either of the twin towers. What we see is a story, two or three stories of structural steel and aluminum cladding. No floors and virtually no concrete. It's all been pulverized to a fine dust, virtually the size of a human hair. It's particulate. This is dust. The metal pans of these concrete floors have been reduced to metal filings, which you can take some of this dust, which Dr. Jones from Brigham Young University on the show earlier has done. It all comes up to a magnet, all of these metal filings. Well, what else comes up to the magnet? Iron-rich microspheres. Well, they're so small, many of them you can't even see. He estimates 10 tons of this stuff would be in all of the dust available. Well, where does it come from? Well, if you have thousands of cutter charges produced through the building and they go off in what it amounts to a very explosive event, because we're talking about nano-sized thermite, as it turns out, in these chips that Dr. Jones found. It's fairly explosive. It would atomize what is the byproduct of an aluminothermic reaction, molten iron. As this is extremely dispersed, the surface tension forms itself around these droplets to make them round. This is the only way that you can get these almost perfectly round iron-rich microspheres in all of the dust.
It's a wonderful cascade of bits of evidence. Let's go to the bottom line. You are an architect. What is your conclusion as to what brought the buildings 1 and 2 down? And then we'll get to 7 in a minute.
Yeah, well, given that we have a symmetrical debris field and a symmetrical collapse, even though the damage was asymmetrical, and we have a complete dismemberment of the structure, and we have explosions occurring 20, 40, and 60 stories down below the ensuing collapse, the inevitable, inescapable conclusion is that we have an explosive, controlled demolition that brought this building down.
Yeah, on a scale of 0 to 100% certainty, where would you be on that conclusion?
I would have to say, given the evidence that I've been privy to, that I am 100% certain. I mean, I didn't even tell you about the several tons of molten metal found by the first responders in the basements of all three of these buildings. There's no source for molten metal. Steel doesn't even begin to melt until 2,700 degrees. These temperatures, by official standards, were no hotter than 1,400 to 1,800 degrees, NIST claims. We're missing over 1,000 or more degrees required to produce all this molten metal, which we have plenty of evidence for and dozens of witnesses and photographs as well.
Okay, you make a very strong case. Let's go to the other side of this debate. John Brown, I'm sure you've been listening. What is your response to architect Richard Gage?
First of all, it's nice to meet you, sir. There's many points that he brought up that I could go into. First of all, the physical evidence that Stephen Jones found, everything that he found is consistent with what was used in the design and the construction of the building. That's pretty much been categorically debunked. As far as the explosions are reported in any office fire.
One second, John. Let's be clear. What was debunked? What's your opinion as to what's been debunked?
Okay, Stephen Jones came out a while ago and said that there were sulfur amounts in the debris that he looked at that were consistent with thermite. And the third most common used material in the construction of the tower was a sulfur-based drywall. And sulfur only makes up about 3% of thermite anyway. And thermite, which I've set off plenty of to melt steel, is like setting off a small firecracker size explosion that initiates like a lava style molten metal. It's not an explosion. And the type of explosions and explosives that this man is saying were in the towers that would be needed to throw that amount of steel that distance would be hundreds of pounds of explosives, which I have set off.
Okay, John.
And it is deafening. John, it would be audible for miles.
Okay, so you're saying it wasn't thermite, you're saying there weren't explosives. What caused those steel beams to fly out like that? And what caused the pop, 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 pop that the 118 firefighters reported to?
Well, there's a lot of things that can explode in fires, and when you have a building slowly collapsing, and you have anchors giving away, and you have steel breaking, and you have generators exploding, and you have, you know, there were 16 miles of staircases in those buildings. I mean, there were massive electrical and mechanical things that were in that building that can explode in fire. And people,
okay, well, let's stop there on that point. Okay, Stephen Jones, Professor Jones, are you back with us? Professor?
Yeah. I hope Professor, the phone will last.
Okay, well, let's be quick. We've got to go to a break in a second. A quick response to John Brown, because he's been assailing your work, sir.
Yes, unfairly. First of all, I would ask John Brown if he's ever heard of the explosive of thermite, which he denied that it explodes. The explosive form is called nano. Have you ever heard of nanothermite, John? And is it if you've heard of it?
In the years of doing demolition, I have never set off or heard of anything called nanothermite.
Okay, it exists. Nanothermite.
Have you ever set off any demolition, sir?
No, I have not. But
okay.
I have set off thermite charges, and I have set off the red chips that behave explosively. Yes.
Totally now, different. So you've never set off.
It is not different. Hold on. Anyone listening can Google on nanothermite and determine for themselves that what John Brown says, that there is not an explosive form of thermite, is wrong. Nanothermite is explosive, and yes, I have found
traces of the explosive form of nanothermite unreacted. And we are studying this and confirming that that is indeed
okay.
what this is.
How come you won't put
that to a peer review?
Hold on. That is also wrong and a false accusation. I have submitted to a peer review. A peer review
peer review on 9/11 truth.
Open Civil Engineering Journal, April 18th, was published a peer-reviewed paper. All three reviewers finally approved of this paper. I'm sorry you're unaware of these facts.
Yeah, you submitted 14 things where you guys, where basically what you do is you kind of in a smart aleck way say, here are the 14 things that we agree with, but you will not submit the papers that you circle around to your own people. You won't go as far as you're going today within the civil engineering communities and saying that there were explosives used in...
Untrue again. I have requested, I've sent the paper to NIST, and I've requested to sit down and discuss with them the evidence that we have found for nanothermite and the other evidences as well.
Guys, hold on. Unfortunately, we have to go to a break. I hate to break up this party. Professor Stephen Jones and John Brown, and we've been talking to Richard Gage and a whole bunch of other people. We're going to come back to our debate about 9/11. What brought the buildings down? This is Richard Green. This is Clout. This is Air America. We're glad you're with us. Stay tuned.
This is Do Something Radio. Clout with Richard Green.
And we're trying. We really are trying to do something. We're trying to have an intelligent, journalistically solid debate about some key issues in our month of truth. And if you have a comment on how we're doing it or what we need to do differently or that we need to just shut up and go back to talking about Hillary and Obama or whatever you want to talk about, go to airamerica.com/clout. Go up on our blog and post your comments. And if you have any suggestions for future guests, pro or con the official story of 9/11, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you want to email me personally, rgreen with an E on the end at airamerica.com. Let's go back real quickly. Professor Stephen Jones, tell us, what is your belief as to how the thermite got in there to, in your words, blow up the building?
Exactly how it was done, Richard, the hard physical evidence that we found, the thermite residues, do not, of course, tell us who placed the residues there. I've used the analogy to explain the next step. Of course, we want to find out who and how. But I've used the analogy that a poor fellow was found with bullet holes in him. And, of course, as people come to the scene and look at this, they say, well, this fellow was obviously shot to death. There's a murder here. We need to have a criminal investigation. But the official investigator comes along and said, no, he died of a heart attack.
Okay. Professor Jones, we've got to come back to you. Professor Jones and a whole bunch of other people, you'll be with us after the break. Stay tuned, everybody. This is good stuff. And we are returning to our last half hour in our Thursday night debate series, The Month of Truth, dealing with five different topics regarding what happened on 9/11. Tomorrow night we have Peter Coyote in our Friday Hollywood Clout edition, and we had Richard Belzer last week, and every Friday night we're going to be having a co-host from the Hollywood community who is very immersed in political issues. And then Monday night, I really want you all to tune in, because we are blowing out on airamerica.com. We're blowing out all of the advertising. So it is complete 2 hours or an hour and a half of a course, a webinar following on with the very successful 5 million people experiment that Oprah Winfrey did in creating a community of people who are focused on changing the world and starting with themselves. And instead of a New Earth, which is the second book by Eckhart Tolle, we are going to be discussing the first book, the classic landmark book by Eckhart Tolle called The Power of Now. If you haven't read it, we're going to be giving you an opportunity to get a discount on that and go to airamerica.com/clout for that. And we're going to be having Eckhart Tolle's partner join us, and the publisher of The Power of Now, and Deidre Hall, the NBC actress who is a student of Eckhart Tolle. So that is from 9 till 10:30 on airamerica.com, commercial-free. And for those of you who are going to be listening on terrestrial radio, there will be commercials, but you can log on to airamerica.com and listen to both. Anyway, we're going to come back. Kevin Barrett, who is a 9/11 truther, who is the producer and host of NoLiesRadio.org, and a congressional candidate out there in Wisconsin, has been my co-producer on tonight's show. Kevin, give us a briefing on where you think we are, and any other comments you have about tonight.
Well, I think one important point that needs to be kept in mind is that the reason that we have John Brown on the show, John being an ex-Special Forces member with no particular expertise in architecture, engineering, or science, is that we cannot find a single architect, engineer, or scientist willing to defend the official story of what happened to the World Trade Center in a free and fair debate. We've been trying for years. We canvassed everybody at the University of Wisconsin, everybody at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. There's no such person. I've spent 4 years looking for somebody with credentials to try and defend the official story of what happened to those buildings. Not one such person exists. Now, we brought John Brown on. He's a nice guy, but he's everything he's saying is wrong, and he doesn't even seem to care that it's wrong. For instance, he accuses these esteemed scientists, architects, and engineers of refusing to submit peer-reviewed papers to peer-reviewed journals, but in fact they've been doing this for a long time. And if you're in academia, you know it often takes years to get published. Well, they already, not only have they submitted all sorts of papers, but they've gotten them published. There's this recent paper published in a peer-reviewed engineering journal, co-authored by Dr. Stephen Jones. Tony Zambodi, who was on earlier, is a co-author of that paper. Many, many other peer-reviewed papers have been submitted, and a number of them are going to be published in the not-so-distant future. So that's just complete nonsense, what he said. And so is virtually everything else. I won't go over it all right now, though.
Well, let's let John respond to that. John, we do very much appreciate you being on the show. But why is it that, you know, PhDs, engineers, you know, architects who believe as you do are not willing to stand up and debate Professor Jones or Richard Gage or Kevin Barrett?
Well, I can't speak on behalf of those people, but I would guess that they just don't want to get involved in it. But
We're only talking about the most important moment in our country's history.
I agree with you.
The future of the United States of America. And you, being a former Marine, we know you care about this country.
I totally agree with you.
Other people who do as well.
I feel much more comfortable talking about the tactical aspect, the explosives that would be used, the idea of sneaking bombs past bomb-sniffing dogs, things like that. I'm not an expert.
Okay, well let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. It is my understanding, and perhaps I'm wrong, that that Securicom, the company that was in charge of security for the World Trade Center towers, was that the president of Securicom was a guy named Wirt Walker, who is the cousin of George Bush, the current president of the United States, and that his brother Marvin Bush was on the board of directors. Now, a conspiracy kind of mindset would say, huh, that's pretty, you know what, weird. That's a very interesting coincidence. Maybe if, in fact, the Bush administration, in one way or another, wanted those buildings to be demolished, they would have put people who were kind of close to them in charge of security. And then you shut down the buildings and you take the bomb-sniffing dogs out, which I understand was also done, and you provide a window of opportunity for explosives to be planted. What's your response to that?
Sir, there was a bomb-sniffing dog killed in the World Trade Center attack. So the 9/11 Truths website.
Well, that's a little late. What we're talking about.
Yeah, but my point is that
time, to allow them to plant the explosives.
You can't plant explosives in there if there are bomb-sniffing dogs actively working, my point is. And people always say, there weren't any bomb-sniffing dogs in there, because there's articles saying that because of there was a heightened level security risk of the buildings before 9/11, they reduced that risk to the normal security level. They didn't remove all the bomb-sniffing dogs and remove all the security. They brought it back down to normal level. And being that building was attacked in 1993, it was one of the most secure buildings
in the United States. There was a bomb dog named Sirius that was killed that day.
Okay, I understand. But again, as I said, that's too late. We're talking about before. Kevin or Richard, do you want to comment on this issue?
Well, I could say that the question of how these buildings could have been rigged up for demolition is a very difficult one. But, you know, we don't have to prove how it was done. All we have to prove is that the official story is impossible. And that's been done over and over and over.
But there is some thought about this. I mean, people do ask, how would you plant a thermite incendiary / explosive in this building without 50,000 occupants knowing? Well, it turns out that there was an elevator modernization going on the 9 months prior to 9/11, and if you did have access through security, you could easily, not easily, but in a few months, with a dozen or two dozen men, plant these incendiaries at key locations, because the elevator hoistways were surrounded only by a couple of layers of gypsum board, which we know was the case. And in addition, thermite is not like C4 or RDX. As John Brown suggested, that they're incendiaries that have explosive capability when produced in nano-sized particles, which is, by the way, not made in a cave in Afghanistan. This stuff is very high-tech and only came out in the last couple of years in papers from Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore. And bomb-sniffing dogs would not even detect this thermite incendiary because it doesn't have those explosive ingredients.
Okay, so you're suggesting that it was all thermite in the building, or nanothermite, and there was no C4, no C3, there wasn't any Centex, there wasn't anything like that, there wasn't any deck cord? How do you set off these explosives? How do you make sure they withstand the impacts of the buildings? How do you make sure that not one little piece of these explosives are later found in the rubble, like every controlled demolition there is? How do you make
sure
that? I mean, doesn't that seem like a huge risk?
Yeah, Dr. Jones has found in every sampling he's done small pieces of unexploded and partially exploded thermite. Maybe he should address that.
That's not true. He has found ingredients that are also in thermite. That's not the same as thermite. Where's the deck cord?
Are you willing to listen? Go ahead, Dr. Jones.
No one answered my question about the dogs.
I'm answering both questions about the dogs and the...
Okay, we're now with Professor Stephen Jones. Go ahead.
Oh, good.
Professor.
Thank you. Yes, first of all, nanothermite, and I invite the listeners to Google on that, would not be detected by sniffing dogs. It is comprised primarily of iron oxide and aluminum. Secondly, the question of where residues found of this nanothermite, the answer is compellingly yes. We have found these chips that are bilayered, red on one side, gray on the other. The composition is that of superthermite, also known as nanothermite. And John Brown apparently is just not aware of this research that I've done.
Let me ask you a question. Okay, guys, I don't want to get too much into detail about nanothermite.
But it's a very important
point. Would it take,
go ahead.
I understand. How long would it take to plant enough explosives, whatever the explosive was, to bring down those tall buildings?
Months. And to do it in a tactical manner, especially in World Trade Center 7, where you have Secret Service, you have CIA, you have State Department, you have FBI, and many other veterans and officials who would be attentive to that type of sneaky behavior, it takes months to do it in an overt manner. And that's with cutting steel, that's with cutting drywall and removing
pipe. Okay, so that's a critical issue. Okay, Richard Gage, you're an architect. Hold on, guys. Richard Gage, you're an architect. Is that true that it would take months to demolish this?
Architects don't demolish buildings. We design them. But I think Dr. Jones has an answer to that question.
Okay,
yeah.
Professor Jones.
I mean, he keeps bringing up these questions. It'd be great to sit down with people from NIST. I've requested that. We have two papers, by the way, that are in the peer review process. One of them has been accepted for publication. That makes three now, you see, in the process that are...
Okay, but let's address the point that John Brown brought up. How long would it take
to
put enough explosives in there?
See, Richard, they can't answer the questions. They always got to jump.
Well, hold on, hold on.
No, no, no. We answer the questions in peer-reviewed papers, and we're seeking these reviews. Now we don't need that, course,
okay,
because
professor.
We can use radio control. Radio controlled. And if you look up super thermite match, you'll see that this is the ideal solution. It's touched off with radio. You don't need mild to death.
Okay.
Therefore,
so the radios of the firemen don't.
No, hold on.
Of the explosive guys work.
John, let Professor Jones just finish his thought.
Okay,
so the comment.
Thank you very much. Super thermite in the nanocomposite, the sol gel form, can be painted onto steel columns, and that then can be touched off with radio controlled signals. This would not take months.
How long, Professor? How long would it take to put enough thermite into a building like that to be able to bring it down?
In my paper, I estimate that it depends, of course, on the number of them. You tell them this is where you go. They might not even know what they're painting on to the columns. They have access through the elevator shafts in the towers. That's where you need to plant the explosives, primarily to bring it.
Okay, interesting. John
and
Brown,
so
are you open to
the answer,
John?
Then is it would take weeks, not months.
Okay, but John Brown, that's an interesting hypothesis that Professor Jones brings up. Are you open to the possibility that some of that chemical, that explosive chemical, was painted on and people might not even have known what they were painting on?
I absolutely not.
Why not?
Because I've set off explosives myself. It's not like the movies. You can't just put thermite into somebody's paint can and hope that they put it on.
Have you ever worked with nanothermite?
I worked with thermite. Dr. Jones, if you...
Nanothermite. You said you hadn't even heard of nanothermite. So how can you say that this hypothesis has no chance? You haven't even heard of
it. Dr. Jones, have you set off explosives? Why didn't you wait for BYU to finish their research on your paper before you retired? If you're so confident in all your materials, why didn't you wait?
True.
I would have loved, if I were you, and if I was so confident, I would have stood up and said, I told
you
so.
You just had another falsehood, which I'd be glad to address.
I'm just reading off their website.
But you didn't mention that nanothermite you hadn't heard of before tonight.
I'm being honest.
Now read about it. Don't reject a hypothesis that you haven't even obviously heard of before this conversation.
Hypothesis from a tactical perspective that if my intentions were to bring down... Please let me speak, sir. I'll give you the same respect.
Okay, Professor, let's let John finish. Go ahead.
I'm rejecting the hypothesis that from a tactical perspective, something I'm familiar with, if my mission was to set up the World Trade Center without anybody knowing, with explosives to bring it down and not make it look like a controlled demolition so I could later attack Afghanistan and Iraq, I would implicate Iraq. I would, too, use explosives that would not be traced back to Los Alamos because some professor from BYU decides to go digging through the rubble. And three, I wouldn't have so many factors in my story that could so easily be found. I mean, how do you prevent
John,
the Russians and the Chinese from real-world, real-time satellite surveillance from observing us doing these things?
John, I suppose also that you wouldn't leave 700 tiny bone fragments a half an inch long on top of the high-rise Deutsche Bank building across the street. How did those bone fragments get so small, and how were they there? It is a different thing.
Have you ever fallen a tree? Do you know how much wind and pressure just a tree brings when it falls down next to you?
A hundred ten acres
of concrete falling down on each other is going to create massive air pressure. And
it's
so
it's going to trap bodies. It's going to trap bodies in between the floors, not disperse them in clouds and break them up into half-inch fragments and make 700 of them on the skyscraper
all of those bodies were exposed very closely to nanothermite.
One body was blown into 200 parts. There were 20,000 pieces of bodies all together, and 1,100 of them couldn't even be accounted for at all. In other words, they were vaporized.
If you were tasked with doing this, would you use something that could so easily be traced back to Los Alamos, or would you do something that would implicate the people you want to attack? I don't know what you said. You said that's where they were used. That's where it's been.
Here's what I said, John. I said that Los Alamos has recently come out, along with Lawrence Livermore Lab, describing this research, and you can see it on our website, ae911truth.org.
I don't trust on your websites because of the deceptive.
I encourage you to look at the website before
I've
you make a conclusion
website.
Like that.
I've looked at your website.
It turns out that virtually every architect and engineer who looks at this evidence signs our petition. Why? Because the evidence is overwhelming.
They only look at your evidence. They don't
Guys, I'm so glad that we're providing a forum for this kind of conversation. I wish we didn't have to break. I wish we had hours more. We got to take a break. We come back for a short segment. We've been debating. I think this is a really important debate, and I applaud everyone for participating in it. This is Richard Green. This is Clout. This is Air America. This is the kind of programming I think we need to do more of. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Clout with Richard Green.
Okay, so I've been reading the blog entries. People say, well, you didn't give us enough notice. You know what? I've been talking about this for weeks. Let me give you a week's worth of notice, and thank you, because our numbers were stronger at this time of the evening than they have ever been since we started doing this show. So you guys are getting the word out. I want it to be out even more next week. Next week, from 9 till 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern on AirAmerica.com and your local affiliates, we are going to be doing week 3 of our Month of Truth. What are we talking about? We're talking about the Pentagon. What happened at the Pentagon? So I'm giving you a week's notice, okay? Put it on your blogs, your message boards, send it out emails. We're going to have a similar debate. I want to thank Tony, Stephen, Richard, Kevin, John Brown. You're a brave soul, my friend. We're going to post all of the links to all of these people up on airamerica.com/clout, airamerica.com/clout. Go there, put a blog comment, tell me, you know, anything that you want me to know. And let's end it with someone who, as I said, has skin in the game. His cousin died. He was a firefighter there. Joseph in Anchorage, Alaska. Last words to you, sir.
Well, I applaud your effort, and I'll be tuning in next week. If you consider the tower, the North Tower, an equation, you get more energy out of it than it had in it. There's no reason to follow any of the other questions if that fact can be proven. And that, I think, can be done at my website, csi911.info. That's the only question I ask. No conspiracy. Let's have an investigation for the family members.
Absolutely. And that's the point.
We need a real independent investigation.
We're going to keep talking about that until it happens. This is Richard Green. This is Clout. Thanks for joining us here on Air America. See you next week.